Starstone Insurance against Chicago is our next case for argument. Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, Harry Lee, and I represent Starstone in this appeal. Given the time, I'm going to get right to what I believe are the two critical facts to this appeal and why the district court erred. First, the insurance policy. The policyholder in this policy controls the defense. It is the one who decides strategy, and it pays for the defense. That is a critical difference in the various cases that have been cited to the court. In each of the cases cited to the court, Sullivan, Board of Commissioners, Shorewood, Littlefield, or American Safety on the other side, the difference as to when costs are covered by a policy is whether the policyholder controls the defense. And it's a common sense commercial reason. Where the policyholder controls the defense, it can run up the cost. I'm sorry?
What Illinois case do you rely on for that proposition?
Well, it's not so much an Illinois case for that proposition, Your Honor. It is simply standing back and taking a look at what courts do.
We are interested, this being a diversity case, in what Illinois courts do in particular. One of the things that concerned me when I read the briefs is that there seems to be some indifference in the treatment. There's citation of federal cases, federal district courts, state cases. We're all trying to figure out what Illinois law says about this. Well, let me ask you the question concretely. Has any Illinois court addressed the interpretation of language like the language in this policy, the ultimate net loss clause, for example, on which the district court relied?
Your Honor, I have not seen an Illinois case, an Illinois court deal with that. I have seen federal cases dealing with Illinois law, but not an Illinois court. So it's not a matter of indifference. It may be simply that an Illinois court has not taken this issue up. But the Illinois court has taken a critical issue up in this case, the General Starr case, the Illinois Court of Appeals, and they have looked at the language of the words compensation for loss, which is the critical language in the insuring agreement, which is the language that the city says makes everything different here, even though the word damages is replete throughout the policy.
Didn't include damage, the language damages or the word damages with the phrase to compensate others for loss?
I don't believe it had the word damages. Well, what the General Starr case said in looking at what compensation for loss, not compensation for loss as damages, but compensation for loss, what did that mean? What is that the definition of? And what it found is that's the definition of damages, that compensation for loss under Illinois law, Illinois Court of Appeal law, is damages. They're the same thing. So even though in one aspect of the policy, it says compensation for loss, that doesn't change the fact that what it means is damages.
So what you're saying is compensation for loss is limited to damages. Why can't compensation for loss is damages? Of course it is. But why can't it be more than that? I mean, somebody's going to pay the attorney's fees, right?
Well, it may be that there will be attorney's fees paid, but under the American rule, attorney's fees are not, you're not entitled to them.
Well, unless it's loss, damages is loss, right? I mean, compensation for loss is damages. I agree with that. That doesn't tell me a lot. I mean, that doesn't tell me compensation for loss is only damages.
Well, what it tells you is loss is different than damages, and we agree with that. Loss in this case is Mr. Rivera was held in jail wrongfully, and that's what went wrong. That is his loss. That's like his house falling down or him getting run over by a car. That's his loss. The damages are getting compensated for that loss.
But let's say he sued and he paid his attorney by an hourly rate. I mean, I would say that is loss. I mean, I walk away. The time I spent in prison is worth $15 million. It cost me $3.5 million to collect the $15 million. That $3.5 million is loss. Well, I would not have otherwise spent that money but for the fact that I spent 5 years in jail.
Right. So you expended those costs because of the loss. They're not the loss. Damages because of the loss. They're not the loss.
Are they an additional loss?
They're an additional damage, but they're a damage which is critical in this case, which cannot be assessed against the government. So they can't be called damages. They're not allowed to be damages. And that's what the cases we've showed or cited have said. You can't make them damages. They can only be taxable costs.
I must say, I don't understand why you keep coming back to the word damages when the policy refers to ultimate net loss or the amount someone becomes legally obligated to pay. Well, ultimate net loss and legally obligated to pay are different phrases. The city was legally obligated to pay the amount it paid. Why aren't we focusing on the actual language of the policy?
I will, Your Honor. Ultimate net loss is a definition, and it is used in the insuring agreement. So to read the insuring agreement, you have to put the definition of ultimate net loss into the insuring agreement. Ultimate net loss is a relatively vanilla term. It says all sums you paid in settlement or by judgment. And you stick that in the insuring agreement, and what you get is the sums you paid in settlement judgment in excess of the retained limit that the insured becomes legally obligated to pay to compensate others for loss. So it's an incomplete thought to just look at UNL, ultimate loss. You have to then look at what the UNL was paid for, and that's the insuring agreement, and that gets us back to compensation for loss, which is damages, which cannot be attorney's fees assessed by the judge.
I just don't get it. I have Judge Kirsch's problem. The amount needed to compensate the plaintiff was $15 million. In order for him to receive all of that, the attorneys had to be paid because otherwise their lien on the judgment comes out first. So the only way to compensate the plaintiff is also to compensate the attorneys. Why isn't that covered by this, the amount that Chicago, quote, becomes legally obligated to pay to compensate others? It's legally obligated to pay the lawyers, we will say, $3.75 million, in order to fully compensate the plaintiff. I mean, that's just the language of the policy.
But Your Honor, in the attorney's fee situation, they can't be damages. It's against the congressional act.
That's the word damages. It uses the phrases that we have been quoting from which you seem to be running full tilt.
For example, Your Honor, the policy uses the term Starstone will be, quote, liable only for that portion of damages in excess of the SIR, close quote. It says Starstone, quote, will pay for the total of all damages for all losses, close quote. So damages and losses are different. Damages are categorized by the court the way they are, and they cannot be, the attorney's fees cannot be damages. Your Honor, because the time is so short and I have only about 25 seconds left, I'd like to make sure we don't lose sight of the fact that there's also an exclusion. That exclusion says that Starstone will not pay for any claim for relief other than monetary damages. The City of Dearborn case by the Sixth Circuit, understandably.
Is that the language of the exclusion?
Yes. Yes. The language of the exclusion is.
It says any form of relief.
Any form of relief.
The form of relief is money.
Well, the relief prayer in the underlying complaint seeks three things. It seeks compensatory damages, attorney's fees and costs, and punitive damages. Those are the forms of relief that are sought by Mr. Rivera. And in light of that fact, the form of relief being attorney costs and fees, those are excluded because they are not monetary damages. If it'd be all right, I'd like to reserve the 30 seconds I have left.
Certainly, counsel.
May it please the court. Summary judgment for the city was correct. The attorney's fees and other costs at issue in this case are plainly within the policy's coverage grant, and their coverage is not precluded by any limitation or exclusion in the policy. As the court properly observed or correctly observed, the policy's coverage grant uses the broad inclusive word loss, not the word damages, to specify the type of compensable harm.
My principal question to you is the same as my principal question to Mr. Lee, which is, has any Illinois court dealt with the interpretation of language like this in an insurance policy?
We're not aware of one either. So the plain language.
It's not there, but it would be better in a diversity case if it were.
Yeah. So the plain language of the word loss, I think, should carry the day. And that means that loss would include all types of loss that victims incur, including any attorney's fees and their and other costs they must pay. Starstone wrongly asserts that the coverage grant covers only damage, even though the grant does not contain the word damages or any variant of it. And the drafters of the policy could easily have used the word damages if they had wanted the coverage grant to cover only damages. Starstone has the burden with respect to any limitation in the policy, and it fails to meet that burden. It relies on two provisions in the policy's limitation section, but ignores their context. Those provisions do not undo the policy's coverage grant. Rather, they simply explain how much in dollars Starstone will cover and when its obligations arise. The first of the provisions, section 3G2, concerns how much Starstone will cover. It describes the aggregate limit of Starstone's obligation to pay the city for wrongful acts. That is not at issue in this case because the aggregate limit of Starstone's obligation under the policy is $5 million, while the city's claim is only $3.75 million, well below the aggregate limit. The other provision in the limitation section on which Starstone relies is the last sentence of section 3. But the point of that provision is simply to specify when Starstone's liability under the policy arises, which the provision says is after the city has exhausted its self-insured retention. Starstone pulls the word damages from those provisions as if pulling a term out of its context could somehow override the policy's coverage grant by converting the type of compensable harm for which the policy provides coverage from losses to damages. It cannot. In fact, this is made clear by two other provisions of the policy that Starstone ignores, sections 3B1 and 3E. Each of these provisions pairs the term damages with occurrences, while it pairs the term losses with the term wrongful acts. The settlement of the underlying litigation pertained to claims that were based on wrongful acts as defined in the policy, not occurrences. This supports that the type of harm in this case that is compensable under the policy is losses, not merely damages. Starstone also relies on a sentence in section 1B1. As a limitation, even though that provision is not even in the policy's limitation section. We explain in our brief why that contention is forfeited, but regardless, the provision pertains to defense costs, not costs that a plaintiff received in a settlement, like the attorney's fees and other costs at issue in this case. Starstone likewise has the burden with respect to any exclusion in the policy, and it fails to meet that burden as well. Two of the policy's provisions expressly exclude costs for claims involving asbestos and claims involving nuclear energy. But there is no similar provision for wrongful imprisonment claims like those at issue in the litigation underlying this case. This supports a conclusion that the policy does not exclude costs, including attorney's fees, at issue in this case. Starstone relies on only one exclusion provision, but is not even mentioned fees, but that provision does not even mention fees or costs. It says that Starstone, quote, will not pay for claims or suits against the city for injunctions, equitable relief, or any other form of relief other than monetary damages. This provision precludes payment for claims or suits that are equitable in nature, and it expressly does not exclude payment for claims or suits that are for monetary damages. All the claims at issue in this case were for monetary damages. Thus, the provision that does not exclude payment for them. We ask the court to affirm the judgment.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Lee, you have 23 seconds. Talk fast.
Very briefly, Your Honor. The policy uses the word damages throughout the policy, including the definition of damages, compensation for loss, number one. Number two, I ask the court to look to City of Dearborn, given the lack of Illinois law. It is a case which has the same insuring agreement and the same exclusion and finds the way Starstone asked the court to find. And last, I just note that there is no place in the policy anywhere that says Starstone ever pays costs. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is taken under advisement.